Welcome to Side Hustle City, and thanks for joining us. Our goal is to help you connect to real people who found success turning their side hustle into a main hustle, and we hope you can too. I'm Adam Kaler. I'm joined by Kyle Stevie, my co-host. Let's get started. All right, welcome back, everybody, to the Side Hustle City podcast. The trusty co-host, Kyle Stevie, is in the house. No more vacations.
Well, yeah, that and you're like, we might have a podcast today in about 15 minutes. Can you make it? This pop-up podcast don't work very
well. Yeah, I got some pop-up podcasts. I know this guy's still got a, he's got a full-time job. He's got karate classes he's going to, or, you know, wrestling with people. He's got personal trainer he's got to go to, and yeah, all kinds of stuff.
Freaking hurting.
Got the kids, wife.
Yeah. A
lot of responsibilities, man. Well, we got Mike Kelly with us today. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Adam. It's great to be with you guys.
Love Thanks it.
For having me.
I've been wanting to get you on the show for like a year now or something. Yeah. And you just started, you keep doing stuff. You're writing books. You got two companies. Wife's president of the Rotary. Like, I mean, you're killing it.
He came in with his journal. That always makes me.
He's got the journal.
He does. Yeah. It makes me really nervous when somebody comes in with notes. I'm like, man, I'm lazy. I'm lazy as can be. Yeah.
Well, so if you watch guys like Adam, like you guys, actually, you will step forward and you will do stuff, right? You get out of the box, man. You'll start creating and doing things.
I hope. This is the whole goal of the podcast, is to just let people know that there's things out there that they can do and give people confidence. I think that's one of the toughest things people face when they grow up in a, you know, particular situation. It's the confidence. It's, I don't belong. It's this imposter syndrome. Even when you do something, you have the imposter syndrome, right? I mean, to this day, I've never seen you not in a button-up collar, suit, something. You're the ultimate professional. Like, I strive to be like this, but I still got this. I don't know how you did it, but I still got this, you know, I feel bad. Like, I feel like an imposter sometimes when I wear a suit and I go to a nice event or something like that. I still feel like I'm not supposed to be in it. You know, it's just, you get a little weird, you know?
Where does that come from?
I have no idea. It's probably intimidation. You know, I think you see people that are raised in that kind of environment and you feel like you're not supposed to be there. You know, that's, I kind of have that still.
Mine's counterculture. Like, I just, I can't do it. I can't wear a suit. I can't, every time I wear one, that tie is there and my neck, I just.
I'm you got a big ass neck.
I can do what I do without having to get dressed up. But then mine's just because I like to be counter everything that's you're supposed to do.
Yeah. I also feel like I'm going to say something because of my mouth. Like, it just, it falls out. And no. I've never been trained properly. Like, my wife. Yeah, I know. And my wife's always pointing at me. Adam, you're doing this wrong. Adam, you're doing that wrong. Adam, you know, this or that.
Like, it's super self-conscious.
Yeah, it makes me even worse, right?
Well, we don't look as good as he does.
I know. Look at this guy.
Well, what I call it.
What kind of dumpy look?
What are you, 45, you Mike? You still 45?
No, man, I'm probably twice your age.
No, Mike. No, you look good.
You know, what I call this is social conditioning, right? And we all have it. Where we're raised, family, friends, school. We see the world a certain way. We develop certain habits. And we live them out. And nothing, it's not good or bad. It's just what it is. But the things that are really bad about it that impact us in a negative way, we got to figure out what that is and how to change. And so often we just don't change. We keep going. Mm. Guys like you guys, you know, you can move forward despite that. But there are a lot of people who just get stuck.
Oh, man.
And they can't even get over that hump, man. And that was part of my story. That's part of my story.
I want to hear this because you've told me your story before. We sat and had lunch one day, probably for 2 hours. And, you know, I've known you before that. We worked on your logo for Right Path. But tell us about it. Tell us about North Carolina. Tell us about growing up and the environment you had to grow up in, the time you had to grow up in, and the challenges you faced.
Yes, yes. I grew up in a small town in South Carolina.
South Carolina.
But I do have school a history in North Carolina I'll That's talk right. about. But I grew up the oldest child of four kids, mother and father. We grew up in a four-room house, six of us. We had no running water. We had a pump outside. We didn't have a bathroom. We had a toilet. A little bit later on, my dad, who was a janitor for like 45 years, he ended up building onto the house. We got running water in the house, which was a big thing. That was a huge deal. And so we got a bathroom. Then we actually got a real kitchen at the same time as well. We did not have a car. We walked everywhere. Everywhere we went, we walked. We actually walked downtown to get grocery, and we'd walk back home, and someone would bring the grocery. My mother paid someone to bring the grocery. I was the first one in my family to get driver's license. My aunt helped me get my driver's license. So I got driver's license, and I was the first one to go to college and all those things. But I grew up in a loving home. I had a lot of great things going for me.
But see, that's the thing, that at least growing up where I grew up, with guys that made it and those that didn't make it, the vast, vast majority, and I've been listening to a lot of podcasts about the same thing, is that it doesn't matter what you grew up with. It matters who you grew up with. And having your dad there and your mom and having a somewhat functional marriage, it didn't have to be like the Cleavers, but something functional where your dad gave you support one way or the other. I mean, he may never tell you he loves you, but he wakes up in the morning, goes to work, makes sure you're doing your things you're supposed to be doing, sets a role, sets a discipline. It doesn't have to be like your natural father. It could be just a positive male role model that's consistently there. I think that's the story that for a lot of the guys that I know that got stuck and didn't make it past, you know,
dropped out of school or whatever.
Well, I mean, yeah. Most of the guys I know graduated high school, but it's just there was instability at home, and it led to instability in decision making and a lot of instability in everything else.
Well, you know, my dad wasn't around, but he was also an alcoholic drug addict. So in a way, he didn't pay child support, you know, and we struggled. But in a way, it was good because we broke that cycle. To this day, I don't drink, don't do drugs, you know, none of that, never have. Church wine on Sunday. But for me,
not much.
A tiny sip.
Leaving,
I can't do it. Wine makes me me shiver.
That wine's garbage too.
Yeah, well, I don't drink. Yeah, it's just nasty to me anyway. But like, you know, in my house, you know, grandma was super religious, super Catholic. Like, we had to go to church every Sunday. That discipline actually came from my grandma, who used to tell us stories about the Depression and 30 cents an hour at the Thai factory, $5 a week cooking for the nuns. You went to church every Sunday. You got to kneel. You got to stand. You got to say certain prayers. And it was weird. It took me a while, but then I looked back and I, you know, you didn't want to go, you know, when you were a kid, it's a weekend. You're like, oh, I just want to, you know, go run the streets or whatever. But I didn't think about it until later on in life, but I was like, man, that disciplined me because I had to go there, right? You had to be somewhere every Sunday. You had to be there, right? You had to do what you were supposed to do while you were there. When you left, you still had to go home, say your prayers before you went to sleep. So for me, in a way, I look back, I'm like, wow, like the church was my father. That was, you know, and my grandma was the one sending me out. But my other friends out running the streets, they didn't have that, right? But they also did have a father at the house, but their father might have been drunk, beating them up. Then what did they do? They get a woman, they beat her up. And you got this domestic violence, alcoholism cycle that people go through, or just a cycle of poverty, and you get trapped in that cycle of poverty.
Absolutely, absolutely. Church was a big part of my life. Reading is and was a big part of my life. Math, and my mom pushed that. Wanted me to be a strong reader, wanted me to be strong at math. And that's probably why I'm a financial planner today. But that was an important piece. And the discipline of church, I agree with you very much, and teaching you certain character traits, for me, it was from the Bible, for the most part, was really important. And a lot of my friends, like you guys, they didn't make it. And they did have fathers in the home. Most of the men in my community were alcoholics. And that's just the way it was in the South. And why were they? I wonder about that often. One of the things I experienced as a kid growing up in the South was seeing no blacks allowed signs. I saw that as a young kid, didn't know what it meant. And I will tell you all the stories around that, but I saw it. So think about how that conditions your mindset. When you think about what's possible, what I can and can't do, you can't go in a store. And the time I saw it as like 12-year-old kid walking up the steps with my dad and another guy, and they were ahead of me. We were traveling like 50 miles from my house. And we're going to walk up the steps to get a Coke. So they stop, and we were riding with this guy. I walk behind them. They walk up the steps. They look at each other. They turn around, and they walk back to the car. I looked around them, and I saw no blacks allowed. Didn't know really what it meant. Got back in the car. They said nothing. We went on. We did what we went to do at church and came back home. My parents never talked about it, but it was one of those things that I'm sure weighed on them. So a lot of guys, I would imagine, because they didn't feel that they mattered, they turned to alcohol, It was more alcohol than drugs back then.
It's like Native Americans have a really, especially if they live on a reservations, they have a high proclivity for alcoholism.
Well, once people found out that they did, there's actually a gene. This is what I heard. There's a gene that tells you when you've had enough to drink, and they lack that gene. So they drink themselves to death. And when settlers found out that they had that gene, or they didn't find out the gene, they didn't know at the time, they just knew they drank themselves to death, they gave more alcohol.
But I think now, talking about now, because back then they were still fighting for their freedom, but back now when there's despair and there's hope, the alcohol is just is a release. I mean, you can go to any depressed community, shit, go around here a couple blocks.
Mm-hmm.
How many liquor stores you think are on the on Scott Street?
Yeah,
or on all these other ones.
I throw a lot rock and hit the liquor store back here, right across the street from the project.
How many liquor stores are in Indian Hill? How many liquor stores are in Madeira? Right,
they order their alcohol on Amazon.
Right, whatever. Right, but there aren't that many just corner liquor stores.
No,
that's because people are drinking away their sorrows.
That's it. And this is interesting part of your story. The one that what I picked up on. Your dad didn't come back to the car and tell you why he didn't get that Coke. He kept that from you. I mean, that's some foresight to think, I'm not going to tell my son about this because I don't want him growing up thinking that he's lesser than anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. I never thought about it that way, but that's a great point. Adam, that's a great point.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's, yeah. When did you start to understand that? Like, when did you start picking up on it?
Are you tired of feeling lost in the world of trading and investing? Get informed and inspired with the Talking Trading podcast. I'm Louise Bedford, and I'll help you navigate the markets like a pro. Tune in each week and subscribe now at talkingtrading.com.au or on your favourite podcast app, or check out the link in the show notes. Talking Trading, this is how traders excel.
When I got into college, I was a basketball player in high school, pretty good basketball player. Ended up getting a full scholarship to Mars Hill University. That's where I went to college. I'm the chair of the board now, the first person of color to be chair of school. Been around since 1856.
What? Wow.
But I went there. It was 95% white, 5% or so. Actually, it's probably less than that of people of color. So I went there, and it was like a culture shock for me. I grew up in a high school where we were probably 50-50, white, black, but we went to our own sides of town at the end of the day, and we really didn't socialize unless we were involved in sports. So you go there, you're living with each other in college, and you start to understand people. You start to understand conditioning, what they were taught at home, and I reflected on my own conditioning. But the thing that really opened my eyes was starting to read and study history a little bit. As the more I read, the more I realized that there's a purpose for all this. And it didn't just start when I was born. It's been going on for a long time.
Since people have been
for a long people. Time. For yeah. a long time. And that's when I really started to understand that. One of the great things about the university was they had a vision. The vision was to help people like Mike Kelly and a friend of mine, Ike, Don Eisenhower. He's in North Carolina, Appalachian. Great, great friend of mine. Help these guys and gals have an opportunity. So as I said, it was 95-97% white when I went there. Now we're like 27% people of color. And that's happened over the years. I didn't realize it then, but it was intentional. Yeah. And that's really one of the missions of the school.
Wow. An opportunity.
Providing opportunity.
For people that want to take advantage of it. And we were talking a little earlier about, you know, the amount of people in our city here who just never graduated high school. They didn't even get that opportunity to go to college. They didn't have that mom who was like, Mike, math, you're going to college, right? You're gonna do something bigger. I mean, was that pressed on you, the higher education, or was this something that you wanted?
I wanted to play basketball. I didn't want to stop at the end of high school. No one really talked to me about college. The guidance counselor said to me, you're not college material. You should go to the Army. But I wanted to go to college. So I would read and I'd send letters to colleges, and I would respond whenever a college did send me material. And I got a response from Mars Hill University. They wanted me to come on campus. I went on campus. They treated me like royalty, and they treated me as if they cared about me. And I had an opportunity to play with the guys there. Before I left, the coach said, "Hey, man, who is recruiting you? Who else is recruiting you?" I said, "Well, no one." And that's a whole nother story around why that didn't occur. I was averaging 21 points, 12 rebounds a game.
Wow.
So anyway, he said, "I want to offer you a full scholarship." So I was like, "What?"
What's that? How's that work?
That's exactly right.
Because we ain't got no money. We just got running water.
Exactly. I hadn't taken the SAT. So I went back and I did all those things. It was fine because, again, good, quote unquote, good student, relatively speaking, although I did not take college prep classes.
Mm.
But anyway, I was performing and signed it and ended up going to school there. And it was a great experience. Going there, though, I was the only one out of a class of 7 freshmen to graduate 4 years later. So that's a whole nother conversation when it comes to being able to, you go to college, but what is that percentage of people who are able to graduate, especially young black males, which is a problem in our country right now.
Well, you got more young black females.
Yeah.
Going to school.
Yes.
And I think there's also more programs for, say, women of color with children to be able to go to school for free, things like that, where probably a majority of the young black males are going there for sports because there's an opportunity.
There's an opportunity.
Well, I think out of all the demographics, I think first year away from home students, I think that cuts across all racial lines.
Mm-hmm.
Because we went to predominantly white school, like predominantly white college for football. And I bet at the end of it, we lost 60% of our guys didn't finish all 4 years. And a lot of that was they just didn't have the maturity to go to the class.
Yeah.
I mean, we had.
They were there to play football.
Yeah. At a liberal arts school, they weren't even on a full ride. They were freaking paying to go.
Oh.
And they were just, and it was, and they just didn't have it in them to do the work. Everything had been so easy up until that point. You know, they were decent students. They were the, you know, better players on their team. And once adversity hit, they
folded.
Yeah. Whether it was they weren't playing as much as they thought they should, or it was getting your ass up and getting to class. One of those two.
They didn't have their mom. They didn't have their mom kicking them out of bed.
Yeah. 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 And for me, I actually left school after my freshman year. I was away for a month. I was going to, quote unquote, transfer because most of the guys who came in with me didn't come back. Mm-hmm. Well, between my mom, my aunt, the coach, like, get your behind out of here and get back to school. So I ended up going back, and I'm glad that I did, because I would have been one of those statistics as well. I am no one special. That same thing would have happened to me. I did not have at home people in my family who had experienced going to college and who really knew what it meant to graduate from college. But they did love me, and they encouraged me the best way that they could. People at Mars Hill had my best interest in mind. When I got back after being away for a month, they work with me to get me caught up during the semester so that I could finish strong. And there are so many other stories like that in my life where
one pivot, one pivot,
one pivot.
What would Mike Kelly, that went the other way, that didn't go back to Mars Hill, what would that Mike Kelly have done?
That is a great question. Probably be in a factory, probably would have gotten a job in a factory somewhere and just continued on.
What part of South Carolina were you in?
Sherrill, South Carolina, the home of Dizzy Gillespie.
Oh, wow. There you go.
You guys probably don't know who Dizzy Gillespie is.
Musician, unbelievable.
Yeah,
yeah, wow. Sure. Jazz, right?
Jazz, and there's a project name for Dizzy Gillespie.
Of course.
Where is it at?
It's not far from Darlington, Florence.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I always tell people Myrtle Beach, because Myrtle Beach is not that far away, less than a couple of hours, but it's actually not that far from Charlotte either. It's on that northeast tip of the state there. Right at the North Carolina, South Carolina line, Rockingham.
Oh yeah, sure.
Right there.
Was he? He was a saxophone.
Yeah. He was a trumpet guy.
Trumpet, not saxophone. Yeah, trumpet.
Big jaws, huge jaws.
Yeah. Oh wow. There you go. That's not a bad. That's somebody to look up to.
It is, but I did not realize who he was until
later on.
Later on.
Wow.
I had no idea he was from Sherrill.
Wow.
Until I was an adult. Had no idea.
Well, you and I met through a friend of mine, UJ John, who's from Kuwait, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I went to Dubai with him. And he was able to speak to everybody because a lot of like Indian folks and stuff. And he's from originally, his family's from Kerala, which is South India, but he grew up in Kuwait and he was able to speak to a lot of people in Dubai. And good thing I had him with me because not everybody spoke English. And that was a good time, but he worked at Macy's with you.
He did. Yes.
And talk about like, okay, you graduate college. How do you move up the ranks like that? I mean, kid from middle of nowhere, South Carolina, you know, barely, you know, almost didn't go back to school, no running water. How do you get to the position you got at Macy's?
Side hustle.
Oh, side hustle. Okay.
And my side hustle was learning, studying, developing a vision of where I wanted to be, what I wanted to do, reading everything I could get my hands on, taking classes, trying things, failing, but really teaching myself beyond my job. I held a job in textiles right after college. 2 years, it was a grind. It was terrible. And I could see that textiles was going, not going to be in the States, just wanting to be here. Anyway, had an opportunity after that to work with Michelin, French-owned tire company, worked with Michelin for about 16 years. Great organization. With Michelin, I learned marketing, sales, finance, HR. I did some international project management work in Europe. In Europe, I had an opportunity to be a part of a team that was looking at developing a Salesforce automation system that our goal was to make sure that the world, that our requirements were included in the worldwide system so that it would work for us. And I was there during 9/11, got stuck in Clermont-Ferrand. But Michelin was a wonderful company. I was a high potential there. Moved here with Michelin to get sales experience. And that was in 1997, 98, my wife and me, along with my son. I was going to be here for a year and I was going to go back or either go somewhere else. Well, we liked it. And I said, hey, take me off the fast track. Let me work here for a while. So I worked out of my home for another 7-8 years and got recruited out away from them by Macy's. I met a guy who was on a board for the Warren County United Way. He looked at me one day and said, you'd be great with Macy's. I laughed at him because I love working for Michelin. Great company. Well, anyway, he talked to me for a year and a half, 2 years, put something on the table. I thought, well, I can't refuse this. I countered it. We were able to get there. So I went to Macy's. When I left Michelin, they said, hey, Mike, we don't want you to leave. We can counter. We can offer you more. But we know if you've thought about this and you've made a decision that's best for you and your family. But, hey, know this. If you ever need us, just call us. Oh. So I left and I went to Macy's and had a chance to create a department that really didn't exist when I went there. And that was a great experience because I love creating things. But the entire time I was at Macy's, I spent time thinking about the side hustle city approach. What do I do in 7, 8, 9 years? What do I want to be? And I knew I wanted to have my own business. I didn't know what. Bought some real estate, some apartment buildings. But I knew that I wanted to be in the financial space as well because I saw over the years that most people had no clue of what to do with the money they made because it wasn't taught.
That when we sold our company, I'm like, what do I do?
Yeah.
No idea.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't taught.
And you're scared.
You're scared.
You're like, I don't want to lose this. Like, because you always got that in the back of your head, like, I could go back to being poor.
Yes.
You know? Like we were talking earlier about the hey, I don't belong here kind of thing. Same thing. Like, do I deserve this money? Like, what do I do now that I got this money? I have no idea. There's all these people out here. You maybe come from an environment where there's a lot of scammy people, right? Maybe somebody's going to scam me out of my money. You start thinking worst case scenario.
Yes. And the side hustle thing was interesting in that you did my logo. Mm-hmm. I was with Macy's at the time. I was an executive, but I was thinking about what was next. I was also meeting with people like yourself, just getting a feel for their experiences as business owners. I didn't really have a lot of entrepreneurs in my family. Actually, my mom was a seamstress and a hairdresser, and that was the closest I got to someone running a business when it came to being exposed. But I talked to people. Every day I had a lunch or a breakfast with someone outside the company for the most part, and I would pick their brain. And that helped me develop a clearer vision of what I wanted. And at the same time, I was managing my money in a way that would allow me to shift. So I shifted, and I'm thankful that I did when I did.
Yeah.
Now I'm able to do things to help other people who are really, many people are stuck in the rat race. They've quit and they're still on the payroll.
See, that's the cool thing is that as an executive at Macy's, I mean, you don't really have to do shit outside of that, right? No, I'm not saying your day-to-day work at Macy's.
No, but you're good. Like financially,
you can sit in on Saturday morning and go golf. And then Sunday you can go golf. And probably any morning you wanted to.
Maybe unless you're building a brand new division from scratch. That might be a little different, though.
Yeah, department.
Yeah. And this was mostly in HR, right?
It was mostly in HR. I was vice president of learning and development. Had a team of 125 people spread out across the country. Tampa, Phoenix, St. Louis, Cincinnati. Phenomenal people. my approach to leading is to develop, empower, and provide opportunities for other people. And I found that more and more people wanted to be a part of that. So we created a culture that allowed me then to really work myself out of a job. And it was fun. And that's exactly what happened. I had other opportunities with Macy's, but I knew it was time for me to leave.
Yeah. I think Mike's going to be my sounding board if I get this state rep thing for opportunity. We were just talking about it. I mean, this is the biggest problem, I think, in our, you know, in cities and in a lot of places. I mean, opportunity, like access to the understanding of what opportunities are available to you. Right. I mean, you went to college on a basketball scholarship.
Yeah.
So many African-American people, like a handful of things that you think you can go do. Right. If you don't grow up in a neighborhood where you're related to a doctor, you got a friend, neighbor who's a doctor, how do I become a doctor? I have no idea. Like when I was a kid, I wanted to be a baseball player, but here I was going to a performing arts school. Never thought, oh, you got to go to a high school that has baseball in order to be a baseball player, right? Like you don't know what you don't know. And I feel like a lot of times these corporations, right? They out in the business career, you see it all the time. Oh, we've got this diversity program. Oh, we got this thing. But I live in mostly an African-American neighborhood, never got a flyer sent to my house or my neighbor's houses that says, hey, here's an opportunity for you, right? It seems almost like PR.
See, we talked about this, I think, on the first or second podcast, and this is an idea that we really haven't touched back on. And it goes to this, is that I think that you as a business owner, a large, or like even Procter & Gamble or something, you can treat your local community kind of like minor leagues. You can draft good kids out of high school that aren't going to be able to go to college because they don't have the money or they don't have the know-how or whatever it is. You invest not in the just in the high school. You invest in that kid. You're like, all right, you have potential. You're going to give us the first 5 years out of college. Okay, this is the and as the salary increases through while you're in college, you'll get paid that when you come out. But we need to see this, this, and this through college. This is the GPA that you have to hit. And we'll take care of the college part of it. And then you come and you work for us. And you'll take a little bit of a haircut. So if your position opens up at $45,000 a year, you start at $40,000, but you don't have to pay back any student loans. I think that that's something that's missing predominantly from like larger corporations.
Well, the reinvestment in people in the city. How many Mike Kellys are down here right now? They had to recruit you from outside.
Yeah.
How many people come in from Gillette or come in and work at Procter & Gamble or work at Kroger who aren't born and raised in Cincinnati? Yeah. But you've got a lot of kids here who are dropping out of school, who could be the next Mike Kelly, but that pivot, right? They didn't make that pivot like you made. They took that other road. But if P&G or one of these big companies here in town was to say, you know what, we're going to dedicate ourselves like they did to the housing, 3CDC, right? What happened? All these big companies came in, they got together, they pulled their money and they started buying up property, right? Like you could invest like that, but in people.
Yeah. And I feel like some companies do that. Many of them do. An example of that would be getting my master's. I got an undergraduate degree in business at Mars Hill. I wanted to get a master's in business. Well, Michelin allowed me to get a master 100%. Mm. But it was not easy to do that. Working full time, a family involved in the community, trying to stay healthy. And that's when I hit a wall. I actually hit a wall, but I actually got my master's degree. And after I got my master's degree, I had the opportunity to study the program to see how many people were taking advantage of it. Of all people, very few people were taking advantage of it. And a lot of it's because of the time that's required and the sacrifice that you make to do that. But it was available. So managing your time is another thing that I've focused really hard on and I do today. So being driven, work hard, but how do I invest my time rather than spend it?
So how long was your master's program? 2 years?
It was 2 years.
2 years. So you feel, because we did 4 years of law school at night. You don't remember those 2 years, do you?
I remember them because I was the first one to get the Graduate Student of the Year award they'd never done at because I had almost A's throughout the whole thing.
Where'd you go to graduate school?
It was Webster University in Webster, South Carolina. So yeah. They had a South Carolina campus, and it worked beautifully with my schedule, so I did it. And I loved it because I was able to apply what I was learning back on the job. That's why I remember. Because there were things I was learning, and some of the professors they were educated, but they had worked in the workforce, so they sort of got it. So it was really practical.
That's good, because there's a lot of professors out there that have never been out here. You know,
in the theory, yeah. And my wife's a professor, so my wife, she actually was going to grad school at the same time to finish her stuff. But it's you got to make the sacrifice.
Getting your master's with a family and working, honestly, I think is about 10 times harder than getting a law degree with family and working, because the law degree outside of the first semester, everything's just your finals. When you have a master's, you have something to do like every week.
So, Papers to write, research, and it's not
something small. It's enormous. So you might have like I might have to have a memorandum written, or write some sort of action or whatever that class is requiring. But generally, you could get a copy of what one looks like. You can get it knocked out in 4 hours on a Sunday or something. These guys have to do shit all the time. That's why I didn't stay the extra year to get that JD MBA, because I didn't want any part of the MBA program. Kudos to you, my man. That's a lot of work.
And now your wife, and then she was going to grad school at the same time you were?
She was going to grad school. She got an undergraduate degree in guidance counseling education, a master's in business, then a doctorate or EDD in education.
Wow.
She finished that.
She got all the letters.
Look at this. Where'd she grow up?
She grew up in a small town called Holly Hill, South Carolina, right outside of Orangeburg, South Carolina, small town, but it's closer to Charleston.
Similar kind of upbringing. And
actually, my wife had a number of people in her family who'd gotten degrees. They'd gone to college. Her dad was a pastor for many years. Many of her aunts and uncles had gone to college. That was totally different than my family. And she wasn't the first to go to college or any of that.
Oh, you crossed the tracks.
I crossed the tracks big time.
Oh, look at you.
Like I married way up.
You did. Look at this. This is what they teach you, right? Like the high society life. That's what those folks.
Way up.
Yeah, you married up. Good for you.
And well, I matured.
That's it. My wife keeps working on me, I'm telling you. And it's probably the same with you guys. Oh, I know it's with you, but yeah, the wife. Yeah, she'll get you there. That's right. It was your son. How old was your son when you guys were going to getting your master's?
He was just born. I mean, he was young. He was like 2 years, 2 years old. He was young. I gained 30 pounds. I was working 16 hours a day. As I said, a quote unquote high potential. And one of the things that I put this in my book, I started to have headaches. Couldn't sleep. I was just driving, working, school, all this stuff. Husband, wasn't a very good husband at the time. And I was sitting at my desk one day and I thought, I can't take this anymore. I had pounding, couldn't sleep. So I go to the doctor. He said, okay, I'll give you something to help you sleep. I'll give you something for the headaches. So he did. Didn't work. Did that two more times. And then finally he said, hey, look, we need to scan your brain to make sure that you're okay, that there's nothing going on there in your head. So they did. My head was clear. But he said, you are under stress, headed towards depression.
Oh, no.
And that got my attention. Like woke me up. It's almost like God said, hey, you got to change. Well, anyway, over time, and that's why I'm a coach now, executive coach, life coach. I ended up losing 30 pounds. I ended up sort of understanding the importance of investing my time rather than spending it, scheduling my priorities, understanding what my priorities were or are, defining success for myself rather than allowing the company or the community or the city to define it for me. And it changed my life. But I learned that because I hit the wall from pain.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, my dad told me one time, you know, now we have a decent relationship now, but he said, tell me about some of my friends that I was hanging out with. Cause you know, he'd come in every once in a while to town and be like, you know, some of your friends, you're going to find them dead in an alley one day. And he said, cause you know, when you're an alcoholic drug addict, you make a decision. Do I want to live or do I want to die? And there's a lot of people out there that had reached that point in their life. Do I want to keep suffering like this? Or do I want to make a change in my life? And there's another pivot. That sounded like another pivot in your life.
Health pivot. My life is filled with pivots. But understanding the priorities, faith, family, fitness, finances, fun, firm, your job or your business, and friends, and understanding how those rank for me, 1 to 7, and then making sure that I was setting goals in those areas and making sure that they were in my calendar as priorities changed my life.
Is that in your book?
It's in my book. Yeah.
Talk about the book. Talk about the book, Leader Fluence.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of these books, a lot of people we talk to that do have books, they've got some sort of process they've created or something in there. So this is your focus. What is this, like the six Fs, the seven Fs? Or?
Well, the seven Fs is seven part Fs. Of it. And there are a number of different types of wheels of life out there. But my book is really all about two things. Before I can lead someone else, I got to learn to lead myself. Most of the training you get on leadership out there is all about leading in people, motivating, inspiring, mm-hmm. holding people accountable. Very rarely do you hear anyone talking about leading yourself. I wish I'd gotten that training because I might have avoided hitting the wall. How do I lead myself well so that I can better lead other people? That's the first part of it. The other focus of my book is taking a more strategic approach to life. When you hear strategic planning, it's all about strategy within organizations. Rarely do you hear anyone talk about taking a strategic approach to life, which means beginning with the end in mind. I'm looking at my life as if I'm 100 years old. Let's say 100 years old. I'm looking back over my life. What do I want to see? Well, getting that picture in my mind and then starting by defining success, taking a look at my conditioning. We all have it. Figuring out how to break that. And that's feedback and a number of other things. And once I do that, what is my purpose? Why am I here? What is my vision? What would I like to see at 100? And what is my mission? How do I live that out? And then setting goals in those priority areas based on your mission, taking steps intentionally, managing your time, getting accountability, and then celebrating success. That is the book.
I think the hardest part in that's breaking conditioning. Did you ever have to watch films?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And how much fun was that? Every time the coach stopped it, rewound it, stopped it, rewound it, stopped it. Dude, you want to talk about humiliating. You think that you did everything right, and you yelled out on the sideline, and you're like, fuck this guy. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He wasn't out there. And then you look at it on films, you're like, shit, he was right. Mm-hmm. That was terrible. And he doesn't just play it once. He plays it twice, plays it three times.
For the whole team.
Plays it four times. Yeah. And it does it once. I think is to reinforce, you know, that you're wrong. He does it a few other times just to put it into your long-term memory. Like, don't ever do this stupid mistake again. But that's breaking conditioning.
Humbling you at the same time.
That's what it does. It humbles you. It breaks your ego. It's kind of like breaking a horse. Like you kind of get that wild spirit out of there. You keep the spirit, but you don't want the wild part of it that's out of control. And then when you're breaking the condition, you wrote the book, so you correct me at any time, but you break the conditioning is that you've got to really take a deep, deep, deep look into your psyche, into your ego, and accept, like truly accept the fact that your shit stinks, man. Mm-hmm. You got to get it together, and you got to find the ways to make that change so you can get down the path. Cause right now you're headed down the path slightly, but you got one shoe on, or you got a limp. You need to fix that so that you can actually walk smoothly towards your final destination, because you're never going to get it in the state you're currently in. Am I right or am I wrong?
Beautifully said.
Yes.
Beautifully. That's the hardest part. If we can't break our conditioning, we don't stand a chance. We stay in the box. And we started out talking about being in the box. We see it. We've been there. Conditioning is very difficult. It's a huge hurdle. But once you get over it, you have an opportunity then to potentially live a more intentional life. As opposed to having all the winds blow and you do whatever the winds, wherever the wind blows you, you actually are able to be more conscious and make decisions that are best for you and your family and those you love and serve.
Living intentionally. That was another great line. I tried to tell my freaking kid all the time, you have no plan for where you're going right now. You're like a freaking helicopter seat in the wind. You're going wherever like your urges are taking you is where you're going. You're like driving down the road, and instead of looking, you know, 100 feet down the road to see what cars are ahead or what potholes are up there, you're looking at your hood ornament and hoping to God you just make it to your final destination.
Well, he's got two tall, good-looking young men, twins. Yeah. They're trouble.
Nice. Two totally different divergent paths. Like Cayman he's in construction management. He's working for a construction company. He's been working 60-hour weeks all summer during his college summer, trying to make as much money because he wants a truck in the worst way. And then I got Lige, who's the sweetest kid, but God, he does not live intentionally. Everything's accidental. So that's, yeah, living intentionally.
Well, Mike, so you said celebrate your wins. I think there's also, there's a thing there. So you can get kind of caught up in yourself a little bit too. If you celebrate your win a little too much and not keep moving forward.
Yeah.
Sometimes you could be static for a while. And I got to kind of like motivate myself more now. Like I remember I didn't have any problem motivating myself when I was younger. Cause you know, just I knew where I came from.
How in the hell do you say that?
I know, but I just, you know, I got a million things going on. I know. But at the same time, it's like, I could do that. Like, I wouldn't have, I guess I wouldn't have had a problem with working until 3 or 4 in the morning back in the day. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't have anything. So it's like, I've got to do it, got to do it, got to do it and enjoy it. Right now I'm like, you know, sometimes I could be like, eh, I don't have to, you know, I could just sit back and not work as hard. You know, like you got to be careful, I think, with that.
Well, that's how he was like when he was, that's what he said. He was an executive at Macy's. And then he was looking down the road and said, this ain't enough. This isn't going to cut it.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. The celebrate success piece has been a challenging one for me because of that. I want to look over the horizon. What's next? What's next? Let's create. Let's get what people are creating. I finished my certified financial planner's designation, CFP. You may not know a lot about that, but it's almost, I guess it's considered the doctorate of financial planning.
So you had to take like your Series 7 and all your...
That's all outside of that.
So oh, okay.
63, 65. But this is a... You should look up CFP, Certified Financial Planner's Designation. That's the hardest thing I've ever done when it comes to
really?
Education.
That's the hardest thing.
It's the hardest from an education standpoint. It's grueling. It's
wow.
Because you got to know everything about money, literally. And you got to be able to pass the 6-hour test.
I wish everybody would take a CFP class. We need more people to know about money,
Mike. It's huge. It's huge. And I took it because there are so few people of color who are CFPs.
Yeah.
85,000 in the country. And I think it's like 2.5%. People, African-American, Hispanic, I think that's the number. But anyway, it was another
25% of the population and 2%. Wow.
It was another challenge that I wanted to. But after I passed it, I still haven't really celebrated. I've got to do a better job. And I realize that of celebrating success. And I have a very small, a few pages in there on celebrating success because I run into a number of people like me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I feel like, too, when you come from nothing, like I said before, you always feel like it can be taken away. Yeah. Or if you don't keep hustling, it's going to stop.
Yeah.
The blessings are going to stop. Yeah. Something's going to happen, right? You don't know what, but something's going to happen. And it's like, you just got to keep going. You can't keep piling it on. Like, bring me more. I can handle it, you know? And you don't stop. It's not good enough, right? You could be a billionaire and you'll be like, I can do better.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people are driven by failure too, instead of driven by success. They're so scared of failing at something that they don't enjoy when they actually did the damn thing right.
Do you talk about that in your book?
There's a focus on dealing with failure. Failure, basically, there's a book out there called Adapt, Failure Way to Success. I am the sum of my failures, personally. I tried things, a lot of things didn't work, but I learned from them. I learned that I had to become more comfortable with failure. And I had to become more comfortable, learn to be comfortable when I was uncomfortable.
Was that part of breaking your conditioning too?
Yes, it is. It sure is. Not easy, but it sure is. And as a coach, executive coach, life coach, even as a financial planner, I get a lot of opportunities to help people do that. Because most people that I work with, somewhere along the way, they've been conditioned to think they can't. For whatever reason, doesn't matter how little or much they had, how privileged or poor they were growing up, there's just this box, I think, that we all get stuck in. And a lot of it is not wanting to fail. I saw it a lot in corporate America because people didn't want to get on some list over there.
Yeah.
That might impact their ability to get a promotion or raise. So they played it safe. I challenged the team that I had an opportunity to lead in my last role. Fail. If you have the right intentions, the right heart, you're doing something for the right reasons. If you fail, tell them it's Mike Kelly's fault. I'll take full blame for it.
Mm.
So I said that and they exhale. My direct reports, four directors. And it makes all the difference in the world when people feel free. But very few of us feel free.
This is one of the problems in corporate, too, when it comes to innovation. You had to create a brand new department, right? You had to innovate in a corporation with a lot of red tape, a lot of regulation, a lot of you probably ran up against a bunch of people who, you know, oh, well, Mike, you got to go through this first and then you got to jump through this fire hoop and then you got to do this and that. Like they all want to innovate. And then they end up buying up these startups here, acqui-hire startups, to bring in those innovative people. But then you put those innovative people under these restrictions that you have as being a corporate employee, and they just don't function in that environment.
That's a great point. That's one of the reasons I have a desire to join a corporate board, to be in those rooms. I've had a lot of board experience, nonprofit, my university, Rotary, other places. I have a desire to be in a corporate board to impact culture. People need to be unleashed. And really, as we all know, it's all about people, your clients, customers, and the people that work with you. People need to be unleashed.
See, I like to have a libertarian approach in the corporate. Just leave them alone. Just let them perform. Because, like you guys said, when you try to rein in somebody, all you're doing is you're just crushing every bit of risk that they're ever going to try. And you're going to be stuck with just doing what you want them to do. You're going to be stuck with your best business practices.
Back to our school system.
Yeah.
It's a one size fits all situation in most of these schools, right? I mean, I went to a magnet school where 3 bells out of 9 bells a day, I was doing art. You know, I had that ability to be creative and be in an environment where there was no rule. You're an artist. You do what you want to do in this environment. Plus, I was surrounded by everyone at that school who had a talent. Didn't matter where they came from. Half the school came from the projects. This is the second biggest urban housing project in the country. Right here I am in a school with kids that grew up in that environment. I come from a poor Appalachian neighborhood. Didn't matter. Talent spoke, right? Did you have talent? That's all the people in that school cared about. And that's how people judged you, was your talent. Are you putting forth an effort? Are you living up to what God gave you, yeah, right? And that's what mattered at that school. And at a lot of other schools, you don't have that. You just don't, right? And it's are we preparing young people to live out what they're good at?
No.
We're not even investigating what they're good at. We're not even like digging in and really finding out, right? Like, how do we bring that to young people? How do we, as a society or as corporate, there's a responsibility there. There's a government has a responsibility, parents, the church, we all have a responsibility to raise these young people up and expose their talents.
You got to keep it out of the state. The state running anything's freaking is a drain on everybody. You need communities to if you want to break this, you know, losing kids in fifth and sixth grade, you got to have communities. You know, by about the age of 12, things you're interested in. You don't know what it is you want to do in that, but I like to build things. I'm good at math. I like writing. Okay, well, who in this community is building things? Well,
make the connection.
The tech school, there are tech schools, but why not have the local auto mechanic have a class with these kids so that they can take that instead of taking something that they're never really going to need? I mean, who's going to really need different types of sciences?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you think you're going to go in engineering or whatever, then yeah, that's awesome. Then
yeah.
There's an engineering firm somewhere in the city.
How do we make connections though? How do we make those connections and how do we bring these options to the kids? Now that's a challenge, right? That's going to be tough.
State representative.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Absolutely. And winning.
Yeah, exactly. I got to work on that. I got to read your book. I got to read this book. This is going to help me. I can already tell. Well, to Mike, we haven't even touched on Right Path Enterprises, you know, before we go here.
No, I'll wait.
Yeah, no, I want to talk about Right Path. Yeah. I want to talk about Kelly Financial. You know, what inspired you to get those going and how's everything going with those?
Going great. It's going great. One of the things I'd like to say before we shift from the last part of our conversation is I'm on the board of Changing Gears down in Over the Rhine. I don't know if you've heard of Changing Gears.
Yeah, sure.
Get transportation to the poor. Work themselves into prosperity. First generation driver in my family, so I get the opportunity to serve people there, and that's a wonderful thing. And they also have an apprenticeship program right now for people looking to get into that space as automobile mechanics that is available. So yeah, and with respect to Right Path Enterprises and Kelly Financial Planning, those two businesses come from what I've experienced. I had the opportunity to learn things and be exposed to things, and I have a desire to help others do the same. My goal is to help people develop plans. You were talking about your son. Life plans, business, career, financial plans, so that they can live intentional lives. That's basically what it is. Help people find their dreams of freedom, deliver them into their dreams of freedom. And money is at the root of everything.
Has anybody ever asked you?
100%.
Has money. Anybody ever asked you to be a speaker?
I speak quite a bit.
Okay, so you do
I do public speaking, yeah, and I'm looking to do more, and actually getting to do more with this book and other things.
God, you've got a great voice.
Dunny, it's like you should be on TV or something. Like, this is crazy. You're not like, you should have your own show, for God's sake. No, you know where he needs to go? Guys. We need to get him with Jordan. We need to get him with Jordan down to Jackson State, because our buddy Jordan Nevels, it's from here, and we talked about him earlier. He's training poor.
I can't even walk up the steps.
Poor Kyle. Man. Oh, he can't even walk right now. But okay, this guy doesn't even look human. I mean, this is like Hercules. It's crazy. But he was on our podcast, and but he's down there with Dion at Jackson State, he's working with the kids now.
Nice.
Providing the nutrition and everything for
nutrition him. And all that. That would be a great group of kids. I mean, being athletes and, you know, Jackson State. Oh, man, that'd be a perfect group to go talk to.
Well, you know, it's important because young people at Mars Hill University, we're all about purpose, helping kids find their purpose, help them have a great experience at this place, and helping them be equipped to achieve their true potential. Colleges, universities are the best place to do that.
Yeah.
It's the best place to do that. So it is.
Well, now they're giving these kids money.
Yeah.
You could have got some money.
Could have.
Where was that NIL money when you were didn't even have running water? Where was that at? Isn't it amazing, though, that think about the opportunities your father had, lack of opportunities your father had, and your mother. You, first person to go to school, first person to sit on this board, person of color on this board, like first, right? You were in that generation where opportunities started happening, but for your father's generation, his father's generation, you stand on the back of giants.
Huge. I wouldn't be where I am without many people, especially my mother, my father, and my extended family, my aunt and uncles and all. I saw things that I wanted, and I saw things I didn't want. And I felt loved, supported, had a great life, as I said early on, but it wasn't easy. And that might have been one of the reasons why I've been able to do the things that I've had the opportunity to do, because it wasn't easy, and I wasn't afraid to get my hands dirty and strive and drive. That's important.
So how's it been for, in terms of like raising your son? Because you can tell the stories, but he can't relate to your background in regards to having lived through what you lived through without any running water, with being in a four room house. I'm having enough trouble with trying to get my kids to relate to my story growing up, and mine's nowhere near like yours was. How's that going? As a father, not him, because he doesn't know what he doesn't know, but you as a father, when you look at him and you're like, man, you don't have to struggle as hard as I did. Why aren't you doing this or why aren't you doing that?
He is far ahead of where I was at his age. He is working for Salesforce. He's worked for Truist, the bank he worked for was purchased by Truist. He worked in for Fifth Third, got some commercial experience in banking early on. And I wanted him to understand the financial side of life. But all the things that I've talked about today, he didn't understand it early on as a kid, but I was feeding him these things as I was learning them. I was feeding him.
Because you're still learning.
I am still learning. And he's hungry. He's a learner, lives in Atlanta now, doing well. He's got somewhat of a global role with Salesforce, and he is a person who we put him in Spanish at a young age, learn Spanish. You need another language, send him overseas at 12 to travel. Wanted to get him exposed because I didn't get the opportunity to do that.
That's awesome.
And just by being exposed, your mind opens up.
Yes.
It really does.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that there's more.
Travel changed me. It's 100%. I mean, the fact that you sent him overseas, that's amazing. That's you learn so much. You learn how good we have it here.
Yeah.
And you see some of the folks, you're like, what you hear? Oh, they make $400 a month here. You know, when I was in Ukraine in 2017, you had amazing developers there, right? At this blockchain conference. Remember when we went? $400 a month they're living on in the Ukraine. Portugal, the amount of money that people make in Portugal. And then you go into Starbucks, same price for a Starbucks. Like, how long do these people have to work? You got to work 3-4 days just to get a coffee at Starbucks. It's crazy, but you don't, unless you get there and you experience it. When I was in Dubai, you couldn't imagine some of the stuff that was happening in Dubai. I mean, it's the people that do the building and all this stuff treated like crap. They're not even human to them. You know?
I saw my first donkey on the street when I lived in Mexico. I took a wrong turn down a street. Wasn't a wrong turn, like I was in danger or anything. It was just, I went the wrong way. So I was turning back around and I saw a donkey on a city street pulling a cart full of concrete in 2001. I was like, where's your freaking truck, man? And then I had my groceries bagged by a kid. Couldn't have been, it's during a school day, any older than 9 years old. And it's traveled, and that aspect makes you really appreciative of the United States. But when you're 12 years old and that stuff doesn't really mean anything to you, just seeing people speak a different language, different cultures, different lifestyles, different girls. I mean, 12 years old, you're like the girls, you know, the girls, you're starting to understand. So like that part of it, you're like, oh, so my life just isn't Cincinnati, Ohio. There's a whole other universe out there that needs to be explored.
Yes. And that is when we get back to in our cities where young kids don't have the opportunity to get exposed or don't get exposed. The conditioning, the way you see the world shaped. And my son, he was fortunate. And I've shared things with him about growing up. And my wife has shared a little bit about her story. My brothers, sisters, parents, and others have shared a little bit with him. And he's read history, so he's studied history a little bit. Just wanted to expose him. But you're right, it's a different time. More options, more blessings. We sent him to Trinidad, and he had an opportunity to see some of the poverty in Trinidad.
Oh, wow. Oh,
yeah. I went to Nicaragua. My wife and I were in South Korea at a Rotary International Convention. We had 40,000+ people from almost every country. So when you're in a group like that for about a week and you're talking to people, you're just hanging out with people, it's amazing what you learn. But Nicaragua, I went there. I thought I knew what poverty was. Pasarel Las Flores, a village outside of Managua, a couple villages. I had no clue.
No.
I wasn't prepared for what I saw.
No, you thought you were
resource,
poor.
From a resource yeah. report, from a resource standpoint. Yeah, I was. It's amazing. It was amazing to me. But it helped me. You just said it helped me reflect back on how much I have to be thankful for and the opportunities that exist here that don't other places. So I want to strive. You know, I want to move forward. I want to make a difference. I want to help people.
That's right. Because you get caught up in this negativity you hear about America and socialism, like we want free stuff and all this other shit. But it's like there is no free anything. Like there's no money tree that you can pick from. Like it's up to you. I mean, we live in a country where you have to take responsibility for yourself and you have to do it. You have to do the work. And nobody, at the end of the day, I try to tell people, I'm like, nobody feels sorry for you. People have to pay their bills. You can tell them this and that, but at the end of the day, they got to pay their bills. They're trying to raise their kids. Everybody's got something going on. But you have to do it. Like you had to do it.
Yeah.
You had to get out of that house and strive for something better. You know, you knew you had talent. Everybody's got talent. Everybody can do something, right? Everybody's got something. And nobody wants to be broke. Nobody wants to struggle. But something happens in people's lives that hold them back, or somebody tells them something about themselves, or there's some negativity around them and they just can't get out of that negativity. Like, we got to be able to break that somehow.
We do. We do. It comes back to defining success. Everyone's here for a purpose, no matter how much or how little you have. Unfortunately, most of us won't get it. But someone was telling me the other day, we were talking about, I can't remember exactly what we were talking about, but this person said to me, you know, Mike, God doesn't count the way we count. So say you've got 10 people. You're trying to help 10 of them. Two of them get it. They clicks. They start doing the stuff. They make progress. They make an impact. Whatever it is, whatever you describe an impact as, raising their families, doing all the good things that we would expect of anyone. Think about the impact on generations from just those two out of the 10. I've learned to focus more on smaller numbers, touch the masses, but understand that there'll be small numbers of people who actually are willing to take the step and change in a way that allows them to realize their true potential. I've got to be okay with that. And that was hard for me. It's hard even going home friends, family. It's true there. It's true all everywhere.
Breaking conditioning.
You want to help everybody.
Yes.
But you got to be realistic.
You got to be realistic. And that's hard to do when you have a heart for other people.
Yes. Well, and you're an athlete. So you've got that competitive, like, I can do it.
I can do it.
I can get everybody. Yeah.
Yes.
Listen to my goddamn message.
I can win. You? I can do it. Well, Mike, tell him, I mean, LeaderFluence, Mike Kelly, probably find that on Amazon, right?
Yeah. Well, where we are right now is we did an author's release here recently.
Okay.
You can buy it. You can get it on my website. You can order it on my website, Right Path Enterprises. You go to the LeaderFluence tab. You can order it there. We're delivering it. We're going to do an author's international release in January. Well, it'll be on all the bookstores and on Amazon and all that. And I am starting on the audio version. I'll read that in 90-minute segments over the course. So I'm going to start that probably next month, and we'll have that available in January as well.
I love it. Well, Kyle just wrote a book too. His is on tokenization of digital, like creating digital assets for real world real estate.
I'm going to need you to read the audiobook to make it interesting.
I know. See, everybody he's listening else is to you.
Grass, man.
I knew you.
That's big.
This is why he was telling you had a good voice. He's thinking like in his head, like, man, I need Mike to read my audiobook.
I do. It's like now people are actually listening to it. Like, I don't remember anything that was in that book, and I really don't understand any of it, but damn, that guy's voice is smooth.
Kind of a silky voice. Yeah. So Kelly Financial Planning, is it kellyfinancialplanning.com?
It's kellyfinancialplanning.com, and we are an advice-only firm. We don't sell product. We don't receive commissions from brokerage houses and mutual fund companies. We just, clients pay for advice and building plans, comprehensive plans.
Straight up advice. That's awesome. Advice.
That's it.
That's great. Well, Mike, we appreciate it. I'm sure everybody listening appreciates it. And they're going to have to run out and get your book. And then hopefully it's in all the high schools.
We want to make a difference.
Yeah. Just put it in the hands of kids.
Yeah. Adam, Kyle, what you guys are doing, you're making a difference. The Side Hustle City is needed because many people have quit and they're still on the payroll and they're just trying to make it to the next paycheck. So we need to figure out how to help them get unleashed either internally or externally.
Yeah. Real freedom.
Thanks for all you're doing. And thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for joining us on this week's episode of Side Hustle City. Well, you've heard from our guest. Now let's hear from you. Join our community on Facebook, Side Hustle City. It's a group where people share ideas, share their inspirational stories, and motivate each other to be successful and turn their side hustle into their main hustle. We'll see you there, and we'll see you next week on the show. Thank you.